Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Callum Borchers. The opioid epidemic has affected tens of thousands of families in Massachusetts who are struggling with addiction. David and Nick Sheff are familiar with that struggle. They've written memoirs about Nick's addiction to crystal meth, and the movie Beautiful Boy, which is out now and on Amazon Prime, is based on their story.
I'm sorry, Dad. Please just give me some fucking money.
Where does this end?
I gotta see this one through. This is kind of working out for me right now. I got 5 days sober.
It doesn't look like it's working out, Nick.
Oh, it doesn't look like it's working out? So what, then therapy, huh?
You can come home.
No, that wouldn't...
make it work. Please, Nick. Please.
That's Steve Carell as David and Timothy Chalamet as Nick. Now David and Nick have teamed up to write a book together to share their story with a specific audience, teens and tweens. It's called High, Everything You Want to Know About Drugs, Alcohol, and Addiction. It serves as a resource for young people to learn about the realities of drug and alcohol use and addiction. And David and Nick Sheff join me now in the studio. Welcome to both of you.
Yeah, thanks. Nice to be here.
Thank you.
We'll talk about your new book in just a moment, but I want to start with the movie. I know that a lot of our listeners have seen it. We just had the mayor on his way out saying he'd seen it, and he's a big fan. What was your guys' first reaction when you saw the film?
You could start, Pop.
Well, I'll tell you. As you can imagine, it's overwhelming. I mean, we lived it for 10 years of hell, and then, we wrote about it. Nick and I both wrote books about it, about the experience. And then, but still, it was different seeing the movie. It was different. It was different seeing it, and kind of was overwhelming. But also the other thing that happened is, because the movie is so big, because we've got these amazing actors telling the story, we've just heard from so many people who were moved by the story, who it reflected their lives, who felt their story affirmed. People felt hopeful, and it was that's been really gratifying.
And for Nick?
To me, the movie just felt so real, and I feel like, the way that they told the story, it just felt so authentic that coming out of it, it was really hard to watch, but I also just felt so grateful because, I've been sober for 9 years now, and,
congratulations.
Thank you. And I have this great, relationship with my family, and I'm married and all these things, and so seeing the movie was just such a reminder of what we'd gone through, and I just felt so grateful coming out of it, and like my dad was saying, it's just been amazing to be able to talk to people and have them share their stories with us and, just sort of connect with people all across the country about these issues. It's amazing.
And the film follows a fairly long arc, over 20 or so years. And so it begins, David, with your character being very patient, very understanding, very compassionate. And then as things sort of intensify, your patience begins to wear thin. And I want to play an excerpt of the film where that really sort of climaxes.
Hey, Dad, it's me.
Nick.
Yeah. Please don't make me, Dad. I know I did wrong. I want to stop, but please, 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 no rehab, all right? Just let me come home. I need to be home with you guys are going to give me the strength to stop.
That's not going to happen.
I wish that I could help you, but I can't do that. All I can tell you is what you already know. Call your sponsor.
Get help. I love you, and I hope that you get your life together.
I love you too.
And what we can't see there is that Steve Carell playing you, David, then hangs up the phone and is just bawling. How hard in real life was that conversation? Because we've seen you in other scenes in the film begging your son to come home, and this time you said, no, you can't.
Yeah. I mean, even hearing it again brings me right back, because that was, it was just exactly what happened, and I was just so broken by then. I just felt nothing I had tried worked. And when I see that, it makes me think about, how lucky we were, because I did hang up the phone when that really did happen. And Nick did go into treatment. He made that choice himself. And I think about it especially when I hear from people who tell me that they did something similar. They were told over and over again, by counselors, whoever it was, you have to let the person you love hit bottom. You have to stand back. And they did what I did. They hung up the phone. They closed the door. And it led to catastrophe. Their child didn't make it. And so I really, since then, have questioned that whole idea of hitting bottom and that question of tough love. I feel like we need to embrace the people that we love who are in trouble and need our help. Nick was sick. People who are addicted are sick, and they need treatment. They need our compassion.
So in retrospect, you would have let him come home.
I would have. I know that's a hard one, and it's hard because yesterday I met a mom whose son, actually, because he was a crystal meth addict, became violent with her. And obviously, you know, it's different for everybody. But in general, I would say, yeah, don't give up. Keep trying.
And Nick, I mean, for you, was that what you needed, or how do you feel about the tough love aspect of things? Because it strikes me, watching the film, you really see this incredibly special bond that you two clearly have, which I think on the net was a positive, clearly, but the perhaps downside of that was maybe being too soft at times. So what's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like my dad said, I mean, we definitely got really lucky. And I mean, in the last year, I've had a number of friends that were close to me overdose and die because of this opiate epidemic. And I guess there's something like over 200 people a day dying from drug overdoses in this country. So it is really scary. And there's nothing that separates me from all these friends of mine who I've lost. I just got really, really lucky. You know, I think for me, there was some value in knowing that, you know, my dad wasn't going to keep, you know, giving me money or bailing me out. But the message that I eventually got from him was that, you know, he wasn't going to help me, you know, by letting me, yeah, like I said, giving me money or you know, helping me in any way. But if I wanted to get treatment, he was going to be there to help me figure out how to get treatment. And knowing that that was an option for me really did help me, because it enabled me to know that, you know, when I was ready to ask for help, that the help would be there. And, you know, there's a lot of issues with the treatment system in our country, and it, you know, is prohibitively expensive, and it can be you know, a lot of the treatments that I went to weren't even based on any sort of evidence-based treatment, and you know, insurance doesn't pay for treatment like it should. But there are really amazing people working in all communities that are trying to help people struggling with substance abuse issues and mental health issues. And you know, the thing that we've learned is that the help really is out there if we ask for it. It can be hard to find, but it is there. And so that, I think, is really like a positive, hopeful message.
And is that the message that you're hoping to deliver in the new book? Again, it's called High. What's the inspiration, Nick, for the book?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. You know, part of what we wanted to do with High is I remember when I was going through puberty, my dad like gave me this book that was like everything that, you know, a man wants to know about puberty or something. And I remember reading it because I was too embarrassed to ask questions about like what was going on with my body and stuff. And it was helpful to have a book like that. So in a way, we kind of wanted to do something like that with drug stuff, because, you know, young people are exposed to drugs at such a young age in our country. You know, I started smoking pot when I was 11, and I really just didn't have the information that I needed to be able to make informed decisions. I didn't know anything about addiction or alcoholism as a disease. So what we wanted to do is put together a book that young people and, you know, parents and teachers could use with young people to sort of help answer those questions and give them that information that otherwise just isn't out there.
You know, these conversations between kids and their parents is so topical right now, especially here in Massachusetts, where we've just recently legalized marijuana. And sort of on that point, Dave, I'm coming to you in a moment, Dave, mm-hmm. but I do want to set things up with one more scene from the film that really stands out to me. This is after Nick has been accepted to a half dozen colleges, and he invites his father to, you know, celebrate with a joint.
Hey, whoa, wait, let's stop. Put that away.
We smoke this thing.
No. Are you that's crazy.
Well, I know you smoke.
Yeah.
So let's smoke
no,
together.
No. Occasionally,
look,
like,
let's smoke together.
Listen, or I can just, no, you know, stop it. Stop. Occasionally, from time to time, yeah. I will have a hit or two at a party, but it's been a while.
Oh,
so
okay. So then just smoke. Have a celebratory joint with your son.
No, God, come on.
All right, so just to be clear, the age
that was Steve Carell, not me.
Steve Carell. And just to be clear, the age in Massachusetts is 21, not 18. So that specific scenario couldn't play out. But something like that could, David, right? I mean, you could have perhaps a college student and an adult father be in this type of situation. So I'm curious how you approach that. What kind of guidance can you give to families as they sort of encounter a new legal status for a drug that, at least in Nick's case, was a harmful gateway?
Yeah. Well, I look back and realize that was a big mistake. I mean, I had my own rationale. rationalizations at the time. I thought, you know, Nick was already using it. He was already in trouble, and he was sort of trying to reach out. And it was a way to connect. It was sort of almost like, you know, I actually grew up in Boston. I remember my grandfather taking me to Fenway Park, and when I was way too young, you know, he would give me beer. But you know, the thing I worry about now is that the message that comes often with legalization is that, okay, the returns are in. Marijuana is safe. We know that. And so that perception of risk goes way down. And kids need to know that, you know, marijuana isn't safe. I mean, people, all these myths around it. Kids are growing up. Their brains are developing more than they ever will in their lives when they're adolescents. And marijuana does. Kids, it's been studied, you know, kids who smoke a lot of pot, it will impact the development of their brain, and that has consequences. So to me, you know, legalization is really complicated and, you know, it's happening whether we want it to or not. So I feel like, you know, the important thing, just like we've done with cigarettes, I mean, you know, we have successfully lowered the rate of kids smoking dramatically. And that's all been about education, about, you know, doing what we want to do in this book, which is not talk down to kids, not, you know, sort of give them the old scare tactics. Don't just say no, because we know that that doesn't work. Instead, we want to, you know, we kind of just say no with KNOW, you know, give them facts, give them information. And the other thing we do is we focus a lot on the fact that we've learned that the reason so many kids are using drugs, we think it's just to get high, we think it's for fun, but a lot of times, in many, many cases, it's not. It's really about trying to deal with the stresses of growing up. And so we really want to educate about, you know, trying to get help if you're feeling depressed, if you feel anxious, or if you're having problems at home. I mean, those in many cases are the things that lead to drug use, whether it's pot or alcohol or other drugs.
But Nick, how do we strike that balance? Because, you know, as your father is saying, you don't want to use scare tactics, because if you suggest somehow that, you know, everybody who tries pot will sort of instantly descend into this awful lifestyle, when kids see that that doesn't happen for everyone, perhaps they'll just disregard the warnings and say, well, you must have been lying, and they won't listen at all. On the other hand, you don't want to sugarcoat things. And as David said, you don't want to say, well, it's legal now, so it's fine. What is that balance?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely complicated. And I think, you know, I mean, one thing that I know from the research that we've done, and I think about it a lot, you know, if I were to have kids of my own, is they've done studies that the longer you can keep a young person from using drugs and alcohol, the less likely they will develop a dependency later on. So some of it is just like, how can we keep our kids from using and drinking for as long as possible? And, you know, to me, I sort of think about it like, there's something kind of sad about the fact that we as a society need these substances in order to like relate to each other. And I remember like when I was in high school, you know, my friends and I would call each other, and if we didn't have pot, then we wouldn't hang out. And, you know, I just thought there was no way that I could ever go to a party and like dance or something without like drinking or using. And there really is something kind of almost kind of pathetic about that to me. And so, you know, as a sober person, it's been such an incredible gift to learn how to have relationships with people and to, you know, dance at parties and have fun and not need these substances as like a buffer. And I think for young people, you know, when I talk to them about these issues, that's something that I really try to talk to them about, because, you know, that really is the time when, like my dad was saying, it's when you learn how to sort of cope with these difficult things that life can throw at you, or even positive things. It's when you're learning how to succeed and fail and have relationships and breakups and everything. And, you know, if you're smoking pot or drinking and not letting yourself feel those feelings, then you're never going to learn how to cope with things in a healthy way. And so, you know, I think it's really cool to kind of, I don't know, just talk to young people about this and raise awareness about it, because it's not something that people really talk about, and it's definitely not something I heard when I was growing up.
Well, we really appreciate you sharing your story in so many forms, in books and in the film, and with us today on Radio Boston. David and Nick Sheff, thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you so much for having us here.
Nick Sheff are the father and son co-authors of High, Everything You Want to Know About Drugs, Alcohol, and Addiction. And the movie Beautiful Boy is based on their story of overcoming addiction. They will be at an Unlikely Story bookstore in Plainville, Massachusetts tonight to discuss the book. And you can read more about the event on our website, radioboston.org. That's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Our show is produced by Jamie Bologna, Chris Siderick, Paris Alston, Zoe Mitchell, Eve Zukoff, and Walt Wuthman. Tim Skoog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Callum Borchers. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston. Thank you.